James chapter 3, he starts in verse 13. He starts with a question. And he says, who is a wise man and doeth knowledge among you? So let me ask it this way. Who needs wisdom? Anybody here need wisdom? How many of you can right now can think of a circumstance in your life where you're not sure what to do? Anybody got one of those? Relationship, finances, some temptation, some problem at work, some circumstance at church, something to do with your neighborhood, something with the children. Who needs wisdom? Well, wisdom is first of all needed by leaders. He says, my brethren, be not many masters. This is back in verse 1 of chapter 3. Knowing that you shall receive the greater condemnation. You know, wisdom is needed by leaders. Wisdom is needed by people in charge. You remember the buck stops here, right? And, you know, the more things that you're responsible for, the more wisdom that you need. But what James does is he says it's not just that you need wisdom if you're in leadership. Wisdom is needed by every person because, well, this book was written to a group of Jewish Christians that are pushed out of Jerusalem so that in verse 1 of chapter 1, James, a servant of God, to the 12 tribes scattered abroad, greeting. So he says in verse 2, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. And so he's saying, hey, you need wisdom because you've got a bunch of trials and you need to actually have joy in the middle of your trials because well, that's normal, isn't it? We're always happy. We skip when we have trials, right? No, that's not our normal. Our brain doesn't work like that. We usually put it on our face. There's a little bit of a scowl. There's a little bit of poor me, right? Nobody else knows. Nobody else cares. What do you know? So you don't live in my shoes. We don't normally count it all joy. We usually complain. We usually get upset. We usually scowl. We usually hit. We usually spit. He says, because your trials are going to produce a faith that's real. You know, if it wasn't for trials, our faith would just be what people tell us to believe. But what kind of faith is that? Usually it's a sure, yeah, I believe that, yeah, yeah. But it's not until we have the trials that we actually go, no, I do believe. No, I believe Jesus is the Son of God. No, I believe God's word is something I can, no, I believe. He says, be thankful for your trials because it's there that your faith becomes real. And then verse 4 in chapter 1, he says, in fact, that's where you begin to actually grow. That's where you begin to have spiritual maturity, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. He says, so count it all joy because now then your faith's going to be real. You're actually going to grow up. But we don't think that in the middle of it. We're usually, it hurts too much to think like that. There's too much pain to keep thinking what's right. And so in the middle of it, we're responding in all different angles and all different ways. And that's why verse 5, chapter 1, he says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth all men liberally and upbraideth not. So who needs wisdom? All our hands are up. Why? Because I don't have a right response to the circumstances of life. Why? Because I can't see my way. Why? In fact, I'm so distracted. I'm so thinking about my needs. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God who give it to all men liberally. So who needs wisdom? We already got that taken care of, right? So we got us all. Okay, so what is wisdom? Let's go back to verse 13. We'll stay here in chapter 3 for the rest of the time. He says, who is a wise man? Endued with knowledge among you, let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. So what we begin to understand is that wisdom is not intellectual in nature. He said, let him show out of a good conversation. Let him show out of a beautiful lifestyle his works. So it's not intellectual in nature. Otherwise, people would say, I have wisdom because I have a degree. But how many of you know somebody with a degree that's dumber than a box of rocks? So wisdom is not necessarily intellectual in nature. I mean, let's not pick on anyone that has a degree. So let's rewind. Let's just talk about, just practically, my grandfather died of heart disease. My dad died of a heart attack, does that necessarily stop me from eating French fries? Yes or no? You judgmental people. You've never eaten with me. So you understand. Because we all have things like that in our own life, right? Anybody know that when I get angry, it causes other people to sin? Does everyone know that? Has anyone here gotten angry? Why? Don't you know? You see, wisdom is not necessarily intellectual in nature. It's behavioral in nature. He says, let him show out of a good conversation his works. You see, let him show out of a beautiful lifestyle. It's knowing how to live for the glory of God in the midst of a fallen world. It's the ability to take the commands and the character of God and apply it to life circumstances right now. Back in verse 22, he says, and be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. It's knowing what to do, when to do, how to do. It's knowing how to do the right thing right now. That's what wisdom is. It's saying, so based on the character of God, based on the word of God, what should I do right now? We're talking about our trailer. We got that like 5 years ago, and we'll probably stay in that, you know, until we start downsizing family. And so it'll be a long-term trailer. And so it started all because we had a pickup truck, and then we had five kids. And where do you stick the fifth kid? You know, we ran out of seats. We could duct tape one, you know. I know which one, but. So we got the semi. The semi is actually cheaper than a pickup. And it stops and it starts and all that kind of stuff, you know, going up hills. Well, we're coming down the Rocky Mountain, out of the Rocky Mountains there into Denver. And we're coming down I-70. I don't know if any of you have ever driven that before, but there's a very steep grade for 5-6 miles, and then a mile plateau, and then another grade for about 10 miles. And we're coming down there, and I didn't realize because of this transmission, there's something you have to do specifically to make sure you're in the right gear. And long story short, I didn't do it. Well, as we're careening down the mountain, Christy is asleep next to us. Kids are playing in the back. We're going to die. My wife's asleep. I didn't need to know why Eaton Fuller designed their transmission that way. I didn't need to know why somebody did not sit me down and say, Will, there's one unique little trick that you need to know. At that moment, I didn't need to know any of those. What did I need to know? What to do right now. You know, that's what was, by the way, we made it. We're here. We're alive. It's all good. All right. I can tell you the rest of the story later. It's all cool. But what I needed to know is what to do right now. Do you know that that's the majority of life? Life is not spent. We don't live life in the past nor in the future. It's right now. It's like, what do I do with what God has called me to do right now? Now there's a way in today to deal with the past. There's a way in today to prepare for the future, but that's wisdom. What do I do right now about the past? What do I do right now about the future? What do I do right now about right now? Wisdom is the ability to make the right choice right now. But as he unfolds it, it's the ability to make the right choice right now in the right way. And this is usually what sets it apart from wisdom or just carnal, earthy living. Because he says, let him out of a beautiful lifestyle, let him show out of a good conversation his works with the meekness of wisdom. Meekness is an essential virtue of spiritual leadership. It's Moses. He was meek. Jesus, I'm meek and lowly. Paul wrote to the church of Corinth with the spirit of meekness and the gentleness of Christ. You want to know whether or not you are living in wisdom? Then check the reaction side. Is there the meekness of wisdom? Meekness is the sweet submission to God and his sovereign control. How is it that I can trust God when there's stage 4 cancer, but I can't trust God if I miss an exit? I can trust God with some serious trial, but somebody cuts me off and I'm gonna yell at you. Is it easier to react or is it easier not to react? Is it easier to answer your child's 53rd question of the same topic? Or is it easier to say something like, I told you that? Is it easier to be patient or impatient? Well, we know that actually meekness is not weakness, is it? When there's a gentleness, when there's a rest, it's got to be from above. In fact, when there's not meekness and there's really not rest, then we know that it's from below. So what he does is he says, so who needs wisdom? We all raise our hand. What is wisdom? Wisdom's the ability to make the right choice right now, the right way. But he says, what's wisdom from below? So if you have bitter envying and strife in your heart, glory not, lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthy, sensual, devilish. For envying and strife is, there's confusion in every evil work. He says, if you have bitter envying and strife in your heart, stop lying. Stop trying to convince people you're more spiritual, because if in your heart there's bitter envy and in your heart there's strife, then you're not as spiritual as you'd like us all to believe. Then he's like, hey, take off the mask and get real. He's like don't lie. Have you ever noticed that we have an endless capacity of self-deception? It's just like, how fast were you going? Oh, I was going, and then we always pat it. What was your grade? We make sure and yeah. We're all have this endless capacity for self-deception. And I think no place are we most deceptive is in our thought process about our own spirituality. Do you know, he says, if you have bitter envying is actually where you're willing to hurt people for your own self-centered purposes. You're actually willing to gossip so that you can be perceived as bigger. You want the idol of yourself wants to be so stroked that you're willing to hurt people to get to it. You're bitter. You're bitter as in caustic, as in sharp. Envying, it's an unhealthy craving for something that one does not possess. It's actually resenting the advantages given to other people. It could be that the advantage has something to do with looks or age or money or position or personality or spouse. Fearful that somebody would be equal or better than you. In fact, we'd actually say things like, Lord, I'd rather your work not happen if it's done better by somebody else. I don't want your will done. I want my will to be done. And you know, we envy those that we most readily identify with. So I don't come into this circumstance and all of a sudden go, wow, I'm just really envious of Pastor Love, because I'm not really called to be a pastor. I'm called to be an evangelist. But I will envy other evangelistic teams. I don't lay in bed, and I mean, I know I look like Mr. Basketball, but I'm not, just so you know that. So I don't lay in bed going, wow, I just wish I could be like LeBron. I don't. I've never once thought that. I've never once thought, wow, I wish I could be just like LeBron. No, you know what? That's why young couples envy young couples. That's why ladies envy ladies. That's why senior saints envy other senior saints. That's why grandparents envy other grandparents. That's why, I mean, we envy those that we most readily identify with. Well, that's not wisdom. That's just your own idol. It's just, you've got, so he says bitter envying and then strife. It's where you will actually hurt people to get your way. It's an inclination to use unworthy and divisive means to exalt yourself. Bitter envying and strife. So he says, hey, if you've got bitter envying and strife, then don't lie. Stop lying. You're not as spiritual as you think you are. You need wisdom, because wisdom that is from above is not this way. He says that the thing that you're talking about is this false wisdom from below. It's earthly, sensual, devilish, earthy. What he means by that is it's just a horizontal way of thinking of things. It's just later on in chapter 4, he talks about a guy. He talks about a guy who is... He says, tomorrow, I'm going to go to the city, I'm going to buy, I'm going to sell, and I'm going to get gain. And he says, no, what you ought to say is, as the Lord wills, you're going to do this or that. Don't you know your life, it's going to be soon required of you? Don't you understand this life is sudden and short? Death is sudden and life is short. So some of us, we just live like horizontal. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go and I'm going to invest in here. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change this job. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go and I'm going to go over here and I'm going to do this. Really? Is that what you're going to do? He says, you're just living according to the way the world thinks. It's worldly. It's earthly. It's sensual. It's just, it feels like it. So what does the world do when somebody cuts them off? What does the world do when somebody cheats on them? What does the world do? You know what they do? They take out a pistol. They take out their fist. They fight like they were fought with. They claw at just like they were clawed at. He says earthly, sensual, devilish, but it's actually satanic in nature. Christy and I, we have little terms we talk about in our relationship. We talk about in our marriage relationship, we talk about ebbs and flows. And you guys got to go? See ya. And this is the best part. All right, well, ebbs and flows. So like a flow is where everything's working good. So, you know, like emotionally and spiritually and physically and everything about our relationship is just working right. So there's flows and then there's ebbs. Do you ever have an ebb? Ebbs are where things aren't quite working right. Have you ever noticed how sometimes ebbs start and you don't even know why? Have you ever tried to resolve some issue and you don't even, and by the time you're trying to resolve it, you don't even remember why it started? Does Satan want there to be unity amongst families? What do you think? Do you think Satan wants unity amongst the church? No. Does he want unity amongst anywhere? No. That's why the father of lies, I mean, he's constantly sowing discord. And so many times when we start to see there's bitter envy and strife in our heart, James says it's earthly, devilish, and it's sensual. And you know what it results in? Confusion and every evil work. For where envying and strife is, verse 16, there will be confusion and every evil work. It's disorder, instability, chaos. People don't know where they stand with other people. People don't know what other people think about them. Confusion. You ever had a circumstance where you didn't know what somebody thought of you? It's like they're always happy when you're not around, and then you get around and they're no longer happy. There's a little party going on in a room, and you're like, ooh, I like parties. Okay, cool, the little party. So you walk over, open the door, party stops. Shut the door, party goes. Open the door, party stops. I think it's me. Yeah, confusion. Confusion. When there's bitter envy and strife and somebody's upset with you, somebody doesn't like you, somebody wants something from you, there's confusion. You don't know where you stand. There's a lack of unconditional love. There's something's not right. Confusion. When this enters into a church circumstance, and I think especially like churches of this size, I mean, you know, like this is family, you know? You can't hide it. So-and-so doesn't like so-and-so, guess what? Other people are going to know. It could be personality. It could be an actual ought, but regardless, it's not the love of Christ. Envy, strife, it results in confusion. You don't know where you stand and every evil work. And so if somebody doesn't accept me, if guess what? If in a broken relationship, if somebody doesn't step up and start making choices of grace-enabled love, then it's just going to spiral out of control. Have you ever seen the Flesh Family? Dad's mad because boss lied, so he comes home and he's frustrated with his wife, and he just lets her know a little something something, and now she's mad, and so she tells the kid he better clean up his room and you can't go out, and she's just overly bearing and overly harsh because, well, she's mad because dad's mad because boss is mad, and so now kid's mad and he kicks the cat, and cat's mad, so cat's claws on dad, so dad's mad again. Have you ever noticed flesh begets flesh until somebody makes a choice of love? Seriously. So guess what? The onus is on us no matter what. Somebody didn't do what I expected. So I'm tempted to have some fling some serious bitter envy and strife at them. God wants me to love them. But if they're flinging the bitter envy and strife my way, guess what? I need to love them. Until somebody steps up and makes a choice of love, it will just continue to spin out of control. Bitter envy always produces confusion and every evil work. But he flips it and he says, he says now, the wisdom from above is this is what it looks like. He says, so you need wisdom. Wisdom's the ability to make the right choice right now the right way. But if you have bitter envy and strife in your heart, don't say you're more spiritual than you really are. You're actually very unspiritual. In fact, that bitter envy and that strife is producing confusion in every evil work. But he says the wisdom that is from above, in verse 17, he says the wisdom that is from above is first pure. So wisdom from above, it's pure. So true wisdom comes from who? Who lives above? Who's pure? The wisdom from above is first pure. It's the most foundational aspect of wisdom. It's from God. That's why in verse 5 of chapter 1, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Verse 17 of chapter 1, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom there's no variableness, neither shadow of turning. So contextually, we know he's talking about this good gift of wisdom coming from the Father. Do you know that holiness is both moral in nature and devotional in nature? What I mean by that is morally, it's an abstaining from certain things. It's like, I don't want to be spotted by sin. But it's not just enough to look at holiness from one angle. It's not just that I want to abstain from, it's that I want to devote to. So it's set apart for. So on one side, there's a moral aspect, I'll stop doing that. But on the other side of holiness, there's a devotional aspect, I will enjoy that. If either one of those equations are missing, you're going to have an incomplete holiness. You ever met a cranky Christian? I will not and I cannot do that. Ever. Well, I know that, neither can I, and I'm thankful for that you don't do that. But if your focus is just on what you cannot do, you're gonna have a bit of crank to you. But it's, I'm not doing that so I can enjoy that. So actually I stopped doing that so I can enjoy that. And so if I'm not enjoying Christ overall, then this is just a bunch of bitter rules. But some folks are like, yes, I just want to be set apart to God. I love God. I want to enjoy God. But there's a sloppiness to them because they're trying to enjoy God, but they're not reverencing the fact that he's holy. So he says, first of all, it is pure. But then he says, then peaceable. And you know, this is hard for some because for some folks to be pure and then to be at peace with those that are impure is really difficult. But a person who longs for peace has met Christ. Men of wisdom are to be peacemakers rather than strife causers. Is it easier to pick a fight or is it easier to find a way of peace? Well, just go to the Middle East and ask them that question. You know, to seek or settle a dispute, that's difficult. And if there's not a lack of purity, then it's gonna impact peace. But you know what? Just because they're not quite where they ought to be doesn't mean that we don't have to have a spirit of kindness and ready to make peace if at all possible. So I was in a circumstance, this was I think 2 years ago or so. Anyway, it was a church planning type convention, and it's so amazing. When you start really researching something, you realize there's nothing new under the sun. And so I'm researching this, and I find this whole group of people, and they have their own little world. And as I went to one of their conferences, I realized there are people here that are more conservative than I. And there are people in that group that are less conservative than I. So obviously I'm perfectly balanced, right? Have you ever noticed how we're all perfect in our own mind? So I'm sitting at this table with a group that is more conservative than I, and I'm just kind of just listening. And all of a sudden, now you got to remember, I'm not in this group, okay? So they're sitting there, and then somebody comes over that's actually less conservative than they, and he just starts drilling and killing these guys. I mean, he's just like dropping these verbal hand grenades, and I'm just watching this back and forth, and then he turns to me, so what do you think about, and he points out an issue, and I'm just like sitting there. I mean, I feel like I'm just a bystander. I this wasn't rehearsed. I just looked at the guy and go, well, if it be possible, as much with the life of then you live peacefully with all men. I was a little naive thinking that would be helpful. I said, let us follow for the things which make for peace and whereby we may edify one another. I mean, what they were talking about, there was no way that they were going to change. And it actually had nothing to do with Scripture. It wasn't sin, or it was just peaceable. I mean, who do you hate? Anybody here have a nemesis? What about an arch nemesis? Gentle. I'm terrible at this one. I'm kind of my personality. I'm just like, kunk. That's a verb. Go kunking. It's just considerate, respectful of feelings of others, makes allowances for their weakness. No way. No way. That is not a personality weakness. That is sin. Mm-hmm. That's the way I work. That's not right. I mean, it was last weekend. We're trying to park, and it wasn't in a nice, easy park spot like this. We had a back on this curvy stuff, and I'm plowing furrows in their grass, and that's a lot of weight to sink into grass, and it's going back and forth. And then in the middle of it, one of my children did something to another kid, and this kid is now wailing. And I turned to him, and I'm just like, I let him have it. I was just intent. Oh, I made sure I didn't yell, because that's wicked. I just made sure my personality was yelling. You know what I mean? It was just nonverbal yelling. It was just, you know, it was intensity without the volume, because then I can still make myself feel spiritual. And we get all done. And the Lord's just killing my heart. And I got the child and I said, you know what? You were wrong, but Daddy was wrong. That was not the way. That was not the gentleness and meekness of Jesus Christ. You know what that was? That was me upset because I'm making furrows in this place's yard. And I'm tired and I just drove 6 hours and I can't see where to park. You know what? Gentleness. It's considerate for other people's weaknesses and their personality. Avoids being severe when you don't have to be. I didn't need to be severe. You know what? Is my parenting that bad that the only way I can get my child to do something is yelling or punishing with personality? Am I that bad of a parent? You mean I can't just turn to the child and talk and say, excuse me, was that how you should respond? Okay, we need to talk about that later. If I can't ask that question, it's actually a big reflection on a whole lot of other parenting, isn't it? So he says, pure, peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, willing to listen. Do you know that teachability knows no boundaries? I mean, teachability is transgenerational. None of us have arrived. Do you know the older needs the younger and the younger needs the older? Did you know that? We blew the bearings out on the trailer coming out of California, and we're in Nevada. And I'm looking at this tire that's wobbled, is almost ready to wobble off. I'm just staring at it. I'm like, I absolutely have no clue what to do. Do I call 1-800-BEARINGS? What do I do? I mean, who do I call? And I'm like in the middle of I-80. I don't know if you've ever been on I-80 in Nevada. I mean, you've got one car every 5 minutes. You're just kind of like, I mean, you actually hear birds out there. Did you know there's birds by the interstate? You know? I'm just sitting there. It's absolutely quiet. I'm trying to get cell phone bar. Finally, we chain it up. We get into Winnemucca, Nevada, which is not the bearing capital of the world, okay? And we missed 2 days of the meeting. And I'm frustrated. I've never had that happen. I was just bothered and frustrated and irritated. And so I was just, oh, man. And so we finally get into the meeting. And I'm on the way. I'm calling my dad because dads are great to complain to, aren't they? Dad, you never believe what happened. And, you know, this happened. And then we did this and this. And he goes, so is anyone hurt? No. He goes, oh, great. I guess everything's okay then. The older was teaching the younger about what really matters, wasn't he? But have you ever seen a 74-year-old try to buy something on PayPal? So the older needs the younger, and the younger needs the older. We all can learn something. When we feel like we no longer need to be taught, then we're in a dangerous place, aren't we? The fool despiseth his father's instruction. The way of the fool is right in his own eyes. But he that hearkens unto the counsel is wise. And then he says, not only is it easy to be entreated, but it's full of mercy and good fruits. It actually dispenses of excess to help people's need. Envy is the promotion of self at the expense of others. Mercy is the promotion of others at the expense of self. And he says, it's without partiality, without hypocrisy. It's like, without partiality, I shouldn't treat people differently based on the way they look, the way that they, the color of their skin, the amount of money they have in account. Are you without partiality? Or do you kind of size people up? I don't know. I don't know if I can respect them or not. You ever had a circumstance where you were stranded and somebody came to help you and they just looked really rough? Oh, I don't know. And then they served you and then they went on their way and you're standing there thinking, I was thinking all sorts of wicked thoughts about somebody based on a jacket. Without partiality. But then without hypocrisy, you know what? The will that's standing in front of you right here should not be that much different than the will in the trailer. The will that's will right here shouldn't be that much different than the will with the team or with my friends or in the car. Your life should not have that much of a difference. Oh, things are appropriate, but if you were to come over to my house, it shouldn't be like, shh, put on your best behavior. No, it's just life. It's just without hypocrisy. And then he says the result is the wisdom from above. He says the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace with them that make peace. It's like you actually begin to have a relationship with people that has the flavor of peaceableness. You know, Jesus Christ, people hated him for his message and what he stood for, but anyone that saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed by the Lamb. There's just when he was reviled, he reviled not. He had such a grace about him. So who needs wisdom? Okay, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. And you know what God's given us? He's given us his word. The Lord does speak, and he speaks through his word. And that's what we're doing this week. We need wisdom. We need our reactions are revealing that we lack wisdom. There's some of us, we need wisdom with our family. We need wisdom with evangelism. We need wisdom with how to live in a fallen culture. We need wisdom. And so what is the Lord going to give us? He's going to give us wisdom. How? Through his word. And so let's just come to the Lord and let's just pray first on the first chapter, verse 5. If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Why don't you just come to the Lord right now with your three, four things that you need wisdom, and why don't you ask of God? Let's bow our heads.